Rachel is coming from the eastern side, and the chairman manager is us. Welcome here with us today, and we hand over to you.
Thank you very much, honorable members, Director General Afeni. Let me just introduce the delegation from CETA. Firstly, to say an apology from the chairperson of the board, Ms. Godwa Manase, who unfortunately is unable to make it, and that's why I'm deputizing in her place. I have here a member of the board, Ms. Kuki Mdluwa, who also chairs our Audit and Risk Committee, the CEO of CETA, Mr. Blake Mosley Lefatola, and another member of the board, Ronnie Mabena, as well as some of our officials. The purpose of this presentation, as it says on the front, is to give a report to the portfolio committees on the forensic investigation into the smart identity card tender process which CETA has conducted. So what we're doing is firstly to give some background to the process. Secondly, we will give an overview of the events that triggered the tender, the cancellation of the tender, and then take the members through the different issues raised by the forensic audit report, and then finally to look at the corrective measures that we have taken to prevent similar events, but also to hold the way forward in terms of holding people accountable. So that's the purpose of the presentation today, and I will start by saying that that by means of introduction, the SmartCut ID or SITS is an initiative of the Department of Home Affairs aimed at replacing the Green Book ID to make sure that it's more secure, that authentication can be done easily. And in terms of the allocation of responsibility, the Department of Home Affairs is obviously responsible for processing these documents, production, etc. And the role that CETA plays is responsibility for the acquisition of government ICT goods and services as per the CETA Act. Now, what the tender was for the supply and maintenance of smart cards, raw materials, so plastic, etc., whatever goes into the production of the cards personalization, as well as the card production facility. And CETA was requested to select a supplier that will provide the DHA with the production of the identity cards with a contract integrated circuit chip, to make sure that it is safe and secure, and hence it was called a smart ID card. Now, in terms of the sequence of events, the next set of slides gives you an overview of the sequence of the events. But just to say that after a period the beginning of May, CETA was asked to publish this tender by the Department of Home Affairs. By September 2009, the board of CETA, September 2008, the board of CETA took a decision to halt the tender process and advise Home Affairs to the effect of the Auditor General to do an agreed upon procedure investigation into the tender process, and then started a forensic investigation into the process. We advised Home Affairs at the beginning of December of that year that there are certain procedural and substantive problems with the process, and therefore that we are conducting a forensic investigation. And by April of the next year, that's April 2009, we advised, as a board of CETA, advised Home Affairs to cancel the tender because of the procedural problems that there were in the process. But let me start with the background to the process. The SITS project was approved by Cabinet in July 2001. The Department of Home Affairs then received approval in March 2005 to proceed with the process. By April 2008, the DHA went back to Cabinet and indicated that it's ready to start a pilot for in April 2008 for the smart cards production. And by the beginning of May, the Department of Home Affairs, through its then Director General, then wrote to CETA and requested it to start the process of tendering for the smart card. The process then unfolded in accordance with the as set out in the CETA regulations as well as Act, the process of advertising the bids, and on the 27th of June 2008, the bids closed. The next step then, which took place during July and August, and I'm speaking to pages 6, 7, and 8, which is a summary of the actual processes. The process then starts off evaluation, and those processes include evaluation of the price, evaluation of the technical specification, and then the BE evaluation, and that took place over a period of 2 months, which is July and August 2008.
Okay.
Sorry. Yeah.
Yes. I don't know.
Sorry, we were told that members have received copies
yes,
before.
Yes, Eddie will distribute.
Okay.
Thank you for
alerting. My apologies. Okay.
You can continue in the meantime.
Okay, sure.
Thanks.
Okay, just for the members that have received their documents now, I'm dealing with the background to the procurement processes, which is on page 6. And moving on to page 7, which deals with the evaluation process, technical evaluation, price evaluation, the BEE evaluation processes, which then proceeded during those months. And then on page 9, which deals with the process of the finalization of the evaluation, and on the 28th of August, a recommendation was then made to the next structure, which is the recommendation committee, that then makes the recommendation based on the evaluations on price, technical aspects, as well as the BE components of the tender. Now, at the point when the recommendation went to the recommendations committee, at the beginning of September, the chair of the board, Ms. Manasseh, received an anonymous letter indicated that there are problems with the serious procedural and other problems with the tender. Some issues were raised that made the board decide at the time to take it seriously. And at a board meeting on the 10th of September, the board then decided to halt the tender on the smart card IDs and requested the Auditor General to do an agreed-upon procedure audit, which basically look at this is what the CETA regulations say in terms of the process that must be followed, this is what happened, and to then compare the two. Now, the AG then produced a draft report on the 25th of September 2008. And on the basis of that, at the beginning of December, CETA halted the process and said that the decision to halt the process as was done on the 10th of September and allow the process of the forensic investigation to continue. And at the time, a specific firm was appointed, and members do have copies or will have copies of that first report, which is the Tabane report. The report, draft forensic report of April 2009, raised concerns with regards to the tenders process followed. This report was then finalized a while later, and on the basis of this report, the CETA board then informed the Department of Home Affairs that the integrity of the tender processes has been compromised, and we therefore recommended to the Department of Home Affairs to cancel the tender. The Department of Home Affairs responded to the cancellation of the tender on the 19th of August, and the smart card tender was cancelled in August 2009. Now, what follows in the next couple of pages is a summary of the report from the Auditor General in terms of the agreed upon procedure that the board asked for in September 2008. The first forensic report, which was conducted by Tabane Zulu, and then a second report, and I will explain why we have had two forensic reports, which was conducted by Cesare Saluba, which members also should have a copy of. Let me quickly go through the issues raised by the Auditor General's report. It was an integrity audit that raised questions about who provided the bid specifications, the process of the approval of the bid tender documents, the allocation of BEE preferential points by members, issues of resignation or allegations of resignations of members of the bid committees. And basically, the Auditor General report raised questions that there has been some serious procedural violations in terms of the CETA Act as well as the regulations, and hence forms the basis of the brief that was then given to the forensic firm of that conducted the first forensic audit. Okay, the findings of the 2009 forensic report was as follow, and I'm once again going to summarize the key issues that was raised. And what it said is that there were a number of procedural as well as integrity issues, concerns with regards to the tender, which confirmed the decision of the board to cancel and advise DHA on the cancellation of the tender. It includes inappropriate behavior between the CETA chief of procurement and the former CETA chief of procurement and the CEO for one of the bidding companies. The tender process was compromised by the absence of a business case and flawed tender specifications. The minimum requirements, there were issues there, both in terms of integrity as well as following procedures. CETA did not proceed with the tender without advising the department about the absent business case, and thus proceeded with the tender process without sufficient clarity, highly significant administrative flaws in the process. And lastly, the conclusion of this report was that the award of the tender would not have been a result of a fair, equitable, cost-effective, competitive, or transparent process, and hence our advice to Home Affairs to cancel the tender. Now, the events following this first forensic report in April 2009, if members may be aware or may not be aware, that in April 2010, the minister appointed or cabinet appointed a new board on advice from the Minister of Public Service and Administration to CETA. And one of the briefs of the new board was to look at the turnaround of CETA, given the range of challenges which CETA faced, and most specifically in the area of supply chain management and its procurement and tender processes. One of the first things which the board has done since its appointment in April 2010 was to specifically ask for a review of a whole range of different forensic investigations that has been concluded, that were concluded, that were on the way in CETA, to be able to get an overall picture in terms of the specific issues, for example, the smart card ID, but also in general to have a sense about the extent of the problems with regards to supply chain management in CETA, so that we're then able to take corrective measures, both with regards to people, but as well as with regards to processes and systems. Now, the board specifically decided to have a second forensic report, a second forensic audit report on the smart card ID for two reasons. One of them, there was concerns about the quality of the first report, but secondly, the first report concluded that no official could be held accountable, and as a board, we found that problematic, to say the least. That there are the reports, both that of the initial AG's report as well as the report, indicated serious violation of CETA regulations, but yet at the end of the day, the report said that nobody could be held accountable, and we then appointed a different firm to then look at the issues of a review of the initial forensic forensic report, and specifically look at the question about allocating accountability and responsibility for the failures, whether it's failures of systems, whether it's issues of collusion, et cetera, to be able to advise on those issues. Now, the second forensic report, which is dated as a draft report, June 2011, done by Cesare Saluba, and as I say, members have copies of these. confirmed some of the same findings of the AG as well as the first forensic report, for example, no business case submitted. The BIT specification committee or cross-functional team was informed. If one go to the next phase, the BIT document was approved after publication of the tender. The BEC was not appointed, which is the BIT evaluation committee, was only finalized after the BIT publication. So a whole range of different procedural issues which was not in line with the CETA Act as well as the regulations. In addition to that, it also looked at other findings, the alleged resignations of BID evaluation committee members, and this is quite a serious issue. In terms of accountability, one of the issues that arose from the investigation is that out of the 11 members that were responsible for evaluating the BID, it was said that 7 of them resigned and that only 4 members made the decision. But there was no proof when the second forensic audit of members having resigned in writing, because that's the procedural requirement, that you can't just say that someone resigned, you have to produce resignation letters. There was no evidence of such. In addition to that, these members that are said to have resigned have done the scoring, but their scores were not taken into consideration, and that was also a procedural flaw. And challenge which the second forensic report drew attention to. In addition to that, they also found that there was incorrect calculation of the consolidated scoring, which then advantaged one company over the other with regards to the scoring sheets, and they went into each one of the 226 scoring lines for the tender. There was questions about the conduct of the CETA Chief of Procurement and Regulatory Affairs that declared a conflict of interest with regard to the tender, but then continued to sit in some of the processes that were raised without declaring such an interest. The signing of the BID Evaluation Committee recommendation was not done in accordance with the procedures. And so forth. So the second forensic report, as I say, listed a whole range of different issues that clearly were both impacting on the procedures that were not followed, and secondly on the integrity of the process. Let me just briefly say that all of these points, both the AG's report, the first forensic report, as well as the more detailed second forensic report, points to three problems in terms of CETA systems, in terms of procurement and tendering. The first one is a systems problem, that our procedures are open to manipulation, that there is issues in terms of following procedures, there's a culture of non-compliance. The second one is the governance and leadership issues. In terms of, for example, at the time of the board that was sitting in 2008-2009, the board did not, in terms of its governance rules at the time, did not approve tenders unless they were CETA tenders. So if, for example, this one that came from the Department of Home Affairs, it would go through the CETA management and then straight with a recommendation to Home Affairs, without approval of the board if it's above a certain amount, etc. And then finally, the people issues. As I said, the culture of non-compliance, lack of consequent management within CETA, so that if something goes wrong, there's no consequences for wrong action, even if procedures are not followed, and hence a culture of non-compliance that builds up and then becomes an acceptable form of operation. The board, therefore, has taken a number of different steps to address these issues in the context of not just the smart ID, but also other of the tenders and procurement issues that have become problems over the last couple of years. The first one is to address the governance and leadership issues. I think that one of the, at the time of the tender 2008-2009, the CETA board was quite depleted. It had a number of resignations. I think towards the end of the year there were probably only 5 members, including the chair of the board, still serving on the board. You had a situation of instability in terms of management over a period of 10 years. CETA had about 13 CEOs, and I think that one of them served for about 3 years. So the board had to address those governance and leadership issues, and we have now have a full, complete overhaul of the top executive structure of CETA. We have a new CEO, we have a new chief of procurement, and a whole range of an entire change in the top executive of the agency. In addition to that, the board has also ensure that it have stricter governance of procurement on behalf of departments. So whereas in the past the board only approved bids and tenders above a certain amount if they are strictly CETAs, now the board takes care of and making sure that it does approve all tenders. We have a procurement committee that goes through that process in quite detail. In addition to that, one of the measures that we've also introduced is to make sure that before any approvals of tenders are done, to make sure that there's an audit of agreed upon procedures so that you catch the horses before they bolt. So that before it even comes to the procurement committee or to the board for approval, that this audit has been done to see that these are the regulations and these have been followed in this specific instance. The second measures that we have introduced as a board is also to look at a systemic overhaul of our entire supply chain management structures, the bid evaluation committees, the recommendation committees, so that these issues that we have faced that they don't recur, that we have proper leadership that we can hold accountable in all of these procurement systems, that CETA develops the capacity to be able to make the technical recommendations to departments, and that we're able to address the specific issues that have emerged in the difficulties that we face with this specific tender, but also with other tenders in the past. Let me conclude by talking about our recommendations about the way forward. Having given this overview of the issues, that firstly the smart card audit, the smart card tender RFP 648 of 2008 was cancelled indeed by the Department of Home Affairs in August 2009 on recommendation from the CETA board, given the flaws that we've seen. We have gotten the report of the Auditor General, we have gotten the report from Tabani Zulu, and we have now in progress the report from Sizwe Salube, which members have. And I just want to refer members to the recommendations, which is on page 38 and 39 of this report, and it's the report with a little red dot on the front. Sorry, we've been assured that you did get copies of this before. It's black. Oh, okay, sorry. Mine is red, yours is black. Okay. Page 38 is the last two pages. The initial recommendations of the Sizwe and Salube is twofold. One of them is the systemic governance recommendations in terms of how we should improve our systems, and as I say, over the last year, since the appointment of the new board in its term of office, we have taken significant steps to be able to ensure that we implement these amendments and processes. The second one is that the report specifically raised the issues about contraventions under 9.5, 9.6, and or failure to comply. So it concurred with the previous report to say that there were definite failures to comply with regulations as well as with the Act, and therefore that there needs to be some form of consequences with regards to officials. And what it does is to make a list of the concerned officials, members of the Bid Evaluation Commission, and therefore make a further recommendation that before CETA takes any corrective action, which would be disciplinary action, that the forensic investigation be allowed to conclude its process. And that process is that it has to interview a list of people who were involved in this process, and those people are listed on one of the pages. I think it is on page, let me just find it. Okay, I will refer members to that page, but there's a list of people that they still have to interview. One of the difficulties for the delay is that the overwhelming majority of those officials are no longer officials either in Home Affairs or in CETA, and therefore finding them to interview them is a challenge. But the audit firm is committed towards making sure that it does, and in fact it has started with that process of interview. The both CETA as well as the Department of Home Affairs, obviously upon the conclusion of this process, once all these interviews have been conducted, will then see, based on the recommendation of the audit forms, is there ground for disciplinary actions against people who are still within the organization. And we undertake, I think, in our discussions with Home Affairs that we will indeed take disciplinary actions. I think that for CETA it's very important that we do act if individuals who are still in the organization have been found guilty of, or that they have been implicated in wrongdoing, that we do act against them, and certainly will pursue the disciplinary action. With regards to people that are no longer within the organization, one of the issues, and this is why we want this process to run its course, what we then have to consider is whether there's ground for criminal prosecution against these individuals, because we can't pursue disciplinary action against them. Whether to either report them to the SAPS or to the SIU, and also to explore other options such as blacklisting them and their companies with the National Treasury. But as I say, that process is still on its way, specifically with regards to the individuals, and that CETA undertakes to come back to the Portfolio Committee once that process have been concluded, to then say that this is the action that we're planning on taking based on the conclusion of this report. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for that. Members will now get the opportunity to ask questions, but before that I want to invite the chair back to the chair.
Unfortunately, I am the team.
I know.
Yeah, before we take questions from the floor, I would like to firstly afford the DG of Home Affairs also to make his presentation with regard to this DG.
No, thanks, Chair. Firstly, is to say to the members, we have met with CETA. So the product which we have put on the table is based off out of our discussions of the report, as we are party to this. But Chair, for me, is to more especially when it comes to the part that we accepted the recommendation from CETA to cancel the tender, that what was based on what from our side. So the first issue is that when you go to the report which is prepared by the Tabani Zulu, the first issue, that there's a major problem that around the issue of tender specifications, that the tender specifications were signed after the tender was advertised. That was a major issue for us to consider. The second issue, Chair, which is the biggest problem, which we link, is the issue of the business case, which is mentioned. Because, Chair, in the business case is whereby it is clearly stipulated what we want, but what is important for us is the issue of the funding. Because in your business case, you are able now to cost that this project is going to be costing like this, and then that funding. And you saw on page 33 to 35, that has been clearly spelled out. Then the other issue, Chair, was really the processes which are being mentioned here, which they were not followed. So our view was that had this process proceeded, would have sit, Chair, with bigger problems than the one where we have cancelled it. We think this process was one of the demonstrations of how we have to close these gaps in these procurement processes. And in this one, we think it was good that this thing was picked it up before the tender was really awarded because of the systems which are in place. I think we need to put that. As a result of this, Chair, if you go to page 113 of that report, it will show you, Chair, in fact, before that, page 100 and to page 106 in particular, whereby, Chair, you find that the, on this report. The Tabani Zulu report. It's page 106. You've got So, Chair, if you look at page 106, is where this thing would be really problematic if we have continued with it. Because if you look there, Chair, is that there were recommendations were made up, there are five. One was 26th of August, the other one 9th of September, the other one 4th of September, the last one 16th of November. And you, if you look at it, it's different and different because of these pricing issues, which now, if you have to explain that to the bidders, and if you have awarded any one of those, would be really problematic when your recommendation first was this particular company, and then after that, in another date, is another one, and all those kind of things. Then get the one getcha, which is a killer to us, will be page 113, whereby, in fact, if you start on page 111 first, number 20. It says the price recommended by BEC to RC was irrelevant when they recommended a total price of 17 million, which equates, which equates to 356.32 rand per card, which is more than six times the target price of 50 rand per card. So, Chair, that it goes back to that business case. If that business case is not there, where you would have costed this thing before it goes. So it means the possibility now was that the department would have money of about 50 rand per card, but a bidder is a 356 rand per card, and go to all these problems now of the funding. So we really, as a department, saying, look at these issues, we really felt when you read the report is to say, it was really the best decision for cancelling this project based on this. Because if we didn't do that, it would have given us more problems than the issues we might have that we have cancelled the tender. So I wanted just to add those points.
Thank you, Dixie. Thank you, Deputy Chairperson. Time for questions, honourable members, Honourable Matlua, Honourable Tibedi, Honourable Peterson Maduna, the last is Honourable Marcella.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. Also would like to make use of this opportunity to thank SITA. If my memory serves me well, tomorrow it will be exactly 1 year since SITA left Parliament to prepare this report for us. It's quite a collaborating process that we admit. But I just want to raise some few concerns. that at such a late stage, we still sit with an interim or rather a draft report. If we as a committee can just get clarity on why up until this stage a draft report, now we take cognizance that there are still a number of investigations within the process. What is also lacking from this report is energy exhibits. If you, for instance, look at the letter, we've been given this in a very short space of time. If you look at the letter, it's only an extract of the letter. I would like to know why is it an extract of a letter. And Sita also make references on page 5 on the report, and I'm not sure, I need clarity whether this report that they are talking about that was finalized and the board of Sita decided to review the findings. Which report are they talking about? Because as far as I'm concerned, Chairperson, the challenge for this portfolio committee is, since 2009, allegations has been made that there was a forensic audit report from the Auditor General's office. This committee has applied to the Auditor General to see this report. This report has never come to us. We have never seen this report at all. So I'm actually having a little bit of a problem with the kind of procedure that we are following. But I would like us to flag as a committee that quest to see the report from the auditor itself, the Auditor General, the General's report. And it's quite clear from what we hear here today, there is a lot of flaws within the system. And it actually comes to no surprise, and that's why we've been waited so long for this report. And also, interesting enough, that the minister has mentioned that she has also a bad experience with CETA. So are we saying the fact that we don't have any proof of any nature, of any report, I don't see the Auditor General's report. It was a quest from this committee that doesn't reflect in this paperwork. Are we saying that this is a sanitized version of the authentic Auditor General's report then? So I would like us as a committee, Chairperson, with due respect, to ask CETA to give us all the necessary documents so that we, I mean, it's a quite a very thick document that we receive here today. And we would like to peruse it. We would like to see what the Auditor General has said. And also as a committee, I still feel that we need to get together, peruse, touch, feel, interrogate that report, and have our own processes after this. But I don't believe that CETA is just coming and in broad brush principles come and tell us this is what would happen and this is what we investigate. Hence, we've been told here today that the smart card has been cancelled. It's actually a very sad day for the Department of Home Affairs. Why I'm saying this, Chairperson? Because, you know, we have countries like in Britain that we have problems with visas, and mainly that problem is because of corruption with the ID and the passport. And there is an utmost need for us to have the smart card implemented. We've been lectured here by the DG as far as the MTEF is concerned and also the solution is concerned. But what we've not been told is that not even the MTEF and not even the current financial year make provision, or we don't see anything that there is a smart card project that will start soon. So we need also from the Department of Home Affairs clarity. What is happening on? Why is there no budget seen in the financial year as far as the smart card is concerned? Not even any word on the MTEF. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Tibeti.
Yeah, thanks, Honourable Chair. The first point one would like to make is to appreciate the report from CETA, which worked in collaboration with the Department of Home Affairs, and to say from the upfront that I support the cancellation of the tender is the right thing to do. And if I have to look at it from the other angle, slightly different from what my the speaker who spoke before me said, I think it's not a sad day for the department. I think it's a happy day because they saved the department from a huge embarrassment. If you have to make calculations in terms of if this thing could have gone ahead, it could have been a major embarrassment. So therefore, I would like to look at it from a positive angle and say they have done a wonderful job by actually teasing out these challenges. Now, just a few points I want to make. If you look at, for example, and this is by way of a question, if you like, if you look at the issue of the conflict of interest, I'm looking at the gentleman called Peter Petler in terms of your season Zaluva report. He recused himself, and he did that selectively on some meetings, on others he attended. But then if you look at the Thabang Zulu report, I think it's on page 23 there, there's a letter denying from the person who alleged to have a discussion with him and promised him the job, to say there was no such a promise. It was just a loose discussion. Now, I don't know which... it might be a trivial question, but for me, I just want to find out as to which version do we then take in, you know, accumulating, if you like, the contraventions as they are mentioned in this thing. Whether we add it on, we take the word of the person who's alleged to have promised him a job, because he says no, he didn't promise him anything. The other issue which actually raises serious problems, Chair, is the issue of the anonymous letter. And for me, what is interesting with the letter, reading through the report, is the timing of the letter, which actually went out prior to the recommendation table, the recommendation committee. Now, it tells you a story of the depth of the rot. It's not from outside, it's an inside thing. You don't need any rocket scientist to determine the fact that someone who's sitting inside there supplied this information. You know, it doesn't matter whether it's here or there, but the issue is it contributed towards creating a serious problem in terms of the credibility of the process itself. Now, there is one thing that interests me, because there's clear non-compliance with CETA Act and regulations and CETA procurement policies and so on, but the conclusion is, like, interesting. None can be held liable. But violations and contributions have been done, and there are names mentioned there. I think it's on page, 38 or something, where names are mentioned. Now, I'm raising this thing because my fear is one. If this thing is treated with kid gloves and just put in a storeroom and locked there and say, no, we don't proceed with it, the challenge is there is a high possibility of a recurrence. Because, you know, action sometimes serves as a deterrent to those who are intending to milk from this tender. They must know that once they put their hands there, then the heads are going to roll. So I'm just saying, therefore, that I don't agree with the... Of course, I had the recommendation that was made in terms of the way forward. But I'm so worried because the report concludes by saying there are further investigations, which I think there has to be some time frame in terms of, because it seems to me action can only be taken once certain processes have been followed, certain individuals have been interviewed, and so on and so forth. I'm therefore making up an argument that there has to be time frame so that at least, because I agree with the previous speaker, we need this system We need this smart card ID. So we have to deal with this thing and close on when we move forward. We are not going to face questions as to what have you done to resolve the problem that we experienced in the first tender. So I'm therefore, Chair, arguing that we have to act. The last point is legally. Can we use this report as evidence in if we decide to go the legal route to take up matters, especially for those who are no longer in the employ of the department? Can we be able to use this as concrete evidence to pursue this matter? Because I'm of the view that this matter must be dealt with, and must be dealt with promptly, and action must be taken, so it must be a lesson to those who are still having these sinister minds of putting their hands in the kitty. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think my question might be maybe similar to Honourable Member who just... Thank you for the presentation anyway from CETA, although the report took so long. I just wanted to know that those who were no longer with the organization now for disciplinary measures, CETA is saying it's still on the way. How long is it going to take? I think I'll end up there. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honourable Bosman, I wanted to find out from Honourable Members if we could first break for lunch, because lunch is served at 1, and then come back and deal with all the questions and answers, or I need your eager hands, I need your guidance, whether should we break for lunch or continue with the meeting maybe up till 1:30. The whole presentation. Okay. Honourable Bosman.
Yeah, Chair. This is again. We have a report. It's a draft. It's not a final report. And we are also urged not to implement, or the department not to implement any corrective measures until such time that the outstanding investigative work has been finalized. And as I was going through this report, I can tell you there's many questions I asked myself, because each and every area there's an outstanding issue that has to be dealt with. So I'm saying again, if we are saying the department must continue implementing, what are they going to do? Because the final report might be different from what we have now, pending the additional information that might be coming through around this particular issue. But would like to say we really appreciate the fact that we have been given this particular information. At least we know what is happening, what are the processes that have unfolded. And like it has been indicated before, there are some contradictions somewhere where people would be then alleged to have done this, and in another report then you find something else where those people are actually denying having been involved in such. Though it's an administrative issue, but I think it is important that we say we need a final report within a particular time frame. Though when you deal with investigation, it's never easy to set a time frame, because you need to talk to people, you need to engage to certain individuals, and at times it's difficult for you to find such. There's also other people that were not traced. I don't know what to say, because a person becomes part of a certain committee, and when he's supposed to be interviewed, that person is not traceable. And some are said to have been interviewed telephonically, and at times you're not even sure whether you're talking to the right person. But well, let's take it that that particular interview has been done telephonically. But it is important here to say we acknowledge this draft report. I think we'll have our deliberations on the final report. That says we need a final report, because tomorrow we'll be told, but that was a draft, it was not a final thing. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, this smells a rat, and it's very clear that for as long as we smell a rat without seeing one, we're going to have a problem. So what the members have been calling for, that bring this rat, deal with it, so that at the end of the day, no one will take the department for granted. When there's when there's something wrong that have occurred, one has to act swiftly and decisively to ensure that there is deterrence in the future. So I see that the reports that we have before us are not immediately addressing that at this stage, but simply to suggest that there needs to be such action. And now the question is when, at what stage are we going to see some end results and those people who are responsible being taken to task? And this report, the first time we were told that the report was ready was beginning of last year. We were told that it is ready with the Department of Minister Baloyi. And now, at this stage, there's a draft that they had for more than a year. They had a draft, enjoying the benefit of studying the draft. And now one questions whether or not the report that is before us has not been, somehow prepared in such a way that we get what is good for us. Now, who should decide what is good for us and what is not good for us? For instance, the letter that the report is referring to, we've asked that this letter be given to us more than a year ago. Now, today we are still receiving a report that speaks to some components of the letter, but nobody says this is the letter that came to us. Hence, we had to act. Now, Chairperson, really, we are the portfolio committee. Now, for as long as in some quarters within the department or elsewhere, there is no trust that this department or that this portfolio committee has capacity and has got the wherewithal to intervene and interact meaningfully within the workings of the department, of the portfolio committee, and of course as the legislative body. I do not believe that our oversight will be able to do freely, having been empowered to do so. Now, the report comes now, and we must deal with the report now. No, it can't be like that. You can't give us a report now and say deal with it now. You know, we've been asking for more than a year, and we've been asking questions, also written questions to the minister. Guess what we're getting there? The report is coming. And now it comes like this. No. This one cannot be accepted as the norm that which we have to operate as a portfolio committee. I personally do not accept it. It's good that it's available, but we can never make a meaningful contribution at this stage. And I'm sure members have raised concerns, and some, giving accolades to the fact that the report is here. But if you understand the history behind this report, I can assure you, you didn't come here and say, well, thank you, congratulations, because it is very early for us to do so. But I think what we do appreciate, sir, without any contradiction, is that this is the work towards a very somehow productive step going forward. But we cannot deal with this report in the manner in which we are doing. Otherwise, we're not going to do justice here.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Members. Before I give the sitter to respond to the question, maybe to actually indicate that, you know, this process has been a long process. The matter was referred to the speaker. The speaker then was Honorable Comrade Baleka. The portfolio committee had to approach the speaker that as portfolio committee we need an investigation into this matter. If I remember well, it was in 2007, DG. I'm not sure whether you remember that. Well, we are still a CFO, so I remember. But that was in 2007 when this matter was referred to the speaker for investigation. Reasons why, it was due to the escalation of the funding, because it started at, was it 1.5 or 1.4? It was 1.4. And then after that, it went up to 2.5. My secretary is saying that I'm in the wrong, I'm referring to a wrong project. I'm not sure whether this is the wrong project or this is a project that is the next one. Yes, even this one.
And even this one, as we said, when you calculate the 50 rand per card, gives you the 2.5 billion. But now once you use the one which I was saying now is 300 and something, takes it now to 17 billion.
Okay. Yeah, okay, let me rather keep quiet and not confuse the honorable members and the officials further. But to say that last year we met as a portfolio committee regarding this matter. Not sure whether it was in April or what, I don't remember the date. It was in April. And we were told that they will get a final report in June. We waited in June, we went for recess, there was no report. Well, we felt that no, maybe when we come back, we will attend to the matter of this report. Well, we had other things to attend to, then it just faded away. So, again, today we are not getting a proper report, it's still a draft report. I think, honorable members, it's really disturbing that we are still here sitting with a draft report. And we expected to get a report because even in the Auditor General's report last year, he indicated that this matter should be finalized because there were some investigations pending. So I'm not sure how to deal with this matter, whether should we continue. And one other thing is that we are receiving this Thabane Zulu report now, and we haven't seen and or, you know, read over it, which is another disadvantage to the members. So members, I'm in your able hands for you to actually give us the right of as to whether should we continue or what are we supposed to do. But there were actually questions that were raised before. Let us afford the sitter to respond to some of the questions, and then after that we will see as to what do we do with the report. Over to you, Deputy Chair.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and honourable members. Let me respond to the questions that members raise of clarifications, and then in terms of some of the process issues that were raised. The first question about the why the report such a late stage. I mean, I think as a board we suffered the same frustration, because the forensic auditors had to go through 2,500 pages of documentation. It takes time. We're not their only client. In addition to that, they also conducted interviews with a lot of the members, and if you can see the list of people involved, it's quite a long list of people. A lot of them are not in CETA, and hence they've asked, they've got this a list of 13 people that they still have to interview. They've found some of them since they've compiled this report, but they want to conclude the report so that we can then be able to say that this is the evidence that we have on the basis of which disciplinary action can be followed, one, or secondly, on the basis of which legal action can be taken against individual. Which brings me to the second issue. One of the members asked the question whether the reports can be used as evidence. The part of the reason for not including all the exhibits which are listed in the report is exactly so that it can be used as a legal document as part of our cases, whether it's a disciplinary case or whether we report it to the SIU or SAPS, but it can be used in that manner to build up a case if the particular individuals that's being listed by the final report are then taken through that route. I think that the questions raised about the then chief of procurement and the questions about different versions of the truth, that's the reality what happened when you investigate. But I will say, if I'm a wrongdoer, that no, I didn't know, or I didn't do this, or I didn't do that. And the purpose of an investigation, I mean, we're not, as a board, we're not investigators. That's why we appoint a firm to do that, to be able to then say that, is there a prima facie case for us to continue with the disciplinary action or to report it to the police or the SIU, and they will then take it forward, and a court of law must then decide which version of the truth is the correct version. So I think it's inevitable in these investigations that you will get different versions of the truth, because people obviously have different issues that they need to take forward. With regards to the question about the AGIS report to the portfolio committee, the report, I mean, the request has gone to the AG. I mean, we certainly through our minister can make sure that the report is made available to Parliament so that it's able to discuss the matters comprehensively. Let me just say a couple of final comments before I hand over to my colleague. The first issue is this question about the systemic flaws. I think that one of the reasons why the Board of CETA, as appointed with the responsibility of making sure that we clean up the organization, that if we get its systems in place, that we turn it around, one of the reasons why we wanted to we appointed Cesare and Saluba to conduct this review of all forensic investigations, and as indicated on that report, not just this one, there's I think a list of how many? 32 forensic investigations where nobody has been held accountable or responsible, and as a board we want to do that proper process of doing that cleanup. Unfortunately, if you don't follow things systematically, you suspend people and you pay them for a year, and then you have to settle out of court because you didn't follow the procedures properly. You didn't investigate properly. So unfortunately, we have to make sure that at the end of the day, when you take disciplinary action, when we report them to the police or to the SIU, that we actually have the facts before us, and that we're not found wanting because we didn't follow proper procedure. And that's the unfortunate truth. I think that, I mean, it irritates us as board members as much as it irritates members of Parliament that these things just drag on and on and on and on. The timing of the anonymous letter, I think that the member is correct that CETA faced a serious challenge, and I think that one of the issues why you see a lot of these people no longer in CETA is exactly to do with the fact that we started a process of making sure that you introduce a culture of compliance, that you introduce a system where people are being held accountable. Now, we can do it on our watch, and I think that what we're doing with this process is to make sure that we deal with the legacies in terms of the period 2006 2000 to 2008, to be able to say that this is what went wrong, this is the systems that we place to correct it, and secondly, that we are going to hold people accountable even if they're no longer in CETA. I think that members are correct. I think it's unfair to expect people to discuss the report that they haven't had the opportunity to peruse. I think that certainly as the members of the board, and I won't speak for the DG of Home Affairs, we certainly would be willing to in the near future to answer questions on those reports. It's difficult, and the chair of our Audit and Risk Committee, who deals with the investigators, the forensic investigators, it's difficult to give them a time frame to be able to say that you have to finish this in 3 months. But we would certainly, from our side, undertake to make sure that we have the report ready, that they do conclude the work as soon as possible, because the only thing that is outstanding is those interviewed with the up to 13 individuals that they've identified in the report. The Tabani Zulu report is final. It has been finalized. It's just the one outstanding report is that by Sizwe and Salube, and that is just that they need to interview the remainder of those up to 13 people, and then they would be able to make recommendations on the matters that need to be done. I mean, the main reason why we issued what we call the forensic review process was to make sure that we do hold people accountable. Tabani Zulu came back to us and said that things went wrong, but you can't hold anybody accountable. We think that's unacceptable, and that's why we said that you need to have a different process to make sure that you do hold people accountable. And we beg the indulgence of the committee to be able to conclude that process and to then engage with the committee. Thank you.
To respond on that question, that the smart card is not in the strategic plan going forward. In our strategic plan, we did on page 39, where we said we'll be submitting a proposal for the approval of the pilot, and then at this financial year, which is 11-12, we will be piloting the smart card. But when I deal with Wayo also, so that the smart card is still there, it's not gone away.
Honorable Tibedi.
Well, Chair, thanks. You see, the difficulty I'm having with, let me put it this way. I think I agree with colleagues who say they just want the report now and so on and so forth. I agree 100% with that. I think this is a fair point. But secondly, I do have my own fears, you see, because I think listening to the response there by the colleague there, it's clear that even the final report you're going to get, it's going to contain the same thing, except that there will be extra report on investigations, results. But I don't think it will change materially the report as it stands. So maybe the word draft that is appearing on the front page of the report is the one that we want to use, you know, to shift the responsibility. My view is we can still engage in the report, even if it's not now. Comrades and friends, they can go and read the report, and we can still find time to engage with that report. Because I think waiting for an unspecified period, when you have a document with names of people appearing on it, I think it's more. And let me assure you, some of us are going to feast on this thing in the newspapers very soon. How do you control that process? So once you have a report like this, as responsible leaders, you must engage with the report and say, this is our understanding and our common approach on this particular matter. However, we are waiting for the last leg of the report. At least it confines us. Otherwise, we're going to live here as individuals having reports. You meet the reporter in the street, then you just give information. I think it's unfair for people who are named in this report if you don't put a proper closure on the matter, at least preliminary. so that when we go out here, we know what to say and what to say on this particular issue. But we'll know all of us will be waiting for the last leg, which is interviewing those people who are mentioned on the report. So that will be my intervention, Chair.
Another
word,
Bosman. Yeah, Chair.
Whilst we agree with that, what we are saying, you see, some of us had some experiences where you will get a draft report and you expect it to start processes. In the middle of the process, someone who was initially interviewed decides to say, I want to be the state witness, and now I'm going to give you full information of what exactly happened. And you get a different information altogether that affects the report, and already you've begun to punish certain people or to already implement the draft report. Personally, I had that particular experience in the department I was heading. So that's why I know that a draft report is not reliable all the time. Yes, it might remain as is, but there might be some changes that we must also accommodate. Now, and you see what Caesar has done. He is saying we need to put those things in abeyance until finalization, corrective measures. And tomorrow he's going to come and say, but I warned you that you need not do anything until. We don't know what is at the back of their minds. What is it that they have picked up that they think if we start processing things here? The other thing that is worrying me in this report is that other people are named, but the others are not named. You know, it's also unfair for my name as Grace Pampiri Bosman to appear on a report, and when it comes to other people, it says other officials. You know, it doesn't mention specifically names because we believe that there has been a report that has been done. That says, out of the 13 outstanding, if it's 13 outstanding, probably some of these officials named that are not named are would only finalize their names once that comes. But it is also possible that as those comes, it will clear some of the things that has made you to believe that this other official has to be on the list. So it's a 50-50 situation, which we are saying, if we are getting a draft, it's just a difficult situation for you to start doing things. There are other things that you can do, but there's also other things that you cannot even try, because at some point we will be sued again for denting people or doing things to other people that are actually denting their being, their dignity, because we never had enough information to start doing so. Thank you.
Yeah. We are agreeing that we put the report in abeyance until further investigation or that investigation has been concluded. Is that what you are saying, Honourable Members? My worry also is that the names of people are appearing in this document. And this is highly confidential document, stroke secret. I'm not sure that
I suggest we give the document back.
Yes, that's my suggestion also, that all the documents be brought back so that you know, we let the process to continue the conclusion on this matter. Honourable Marcella.
Yes, Sebastian was agreeing on the return of the document. The suggestion is also that when we get back to discuss any detail around this subject matter, we give it enough time that we're able to engage. If it means we must discuss the issue or the content thereof, we must be able to sit down with the document, at least be given time.
Which ones are we referring back to the department? Is it then Susan Saluba and this one. Then I'm told Susan Saluba has been emailed to to members. The Susan Saluba has already been. Yeah, I think the only one that maybe could be referred sent back is this one. Okay.
Yeah. So listen, I was saying that given the argument that I've raised earlier, that we need enough time, one, to study the documentation, two, interrogate it, three, flag the concerns or questions that we have. Thereby, we can draw a conclusion on our part as members. Now, also, I think we need a legal opinion from the Parliament attorney's legal team whether or not we must send this back, because it's available anyway, it's everywhere. So we are the only people that don't have the report. For more than a year, Minister Baloyi had this kind of a report. And for more than a year, some officials within the department at this report, they were saying, no, it's there, but we can't talk about it. So if you can't trust us as members, who can you trust? Now, I want a legal opinion before I give my report, mine back, because I need this document.
Yeah, no, I agree. That's what I was telling Eddie, that we need a legal opinion on this before we could take it out. I suggest we bring it back to the secretary when we come back after getting an opinion. If the legal opinion says we give back to the people, we will get it back. But for now, I would suggest that the Thabane report, the two Thabane report, be returned to the secretary, and then after the legal opinion, we will give you. Yes. Lunch is served at Mark's building. You are all invited for lunch at Mark's building. Thank you.